24/7 All Sports Radio. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Our next guest is a senior correspondent for McLean's Magazine and the author of a book entitled The Instigator, How Gary Bettman Remade the League and Changed the Game Forever. His name is Jonathan Gatehouse, and a good morning to you, sir.
Good morning to you, Ryan.
This is my favorite sports book I've read in the last couple years. I've got to compliment you on a fantastic biography on the NHL's commissioner.
Well, it's really kind of you, and the check's in the mail.
Is that what the publisher says? So that's, it sounds like you're well-versed in that.
Exactly.
Tell us about how you got started on this project. Why in the world did you want to do this, and how did you get started? This seems awfully exhaustive. You talked to a lot of people along the way about Mr. Bettman.
Yeah, you know, actually, it was the idea of my publisher at Penguin, my editor there, Nick Garrison, who's an old friend of mine, and he came to me and said, you know, no one's ever written a book on Bettman. And the more I thought about it and the more I looked into it, it made a lot of sense. You know, here was a guy, he'd been in charge of the league. He was coming up on his 20th anniversary when we started the project. And he was, you know, by far the most powerful figure that the game had ever seen. And he made all these sorts of changes to the league over the course of his tenure. And then, of course, you know, two lockouts at the time we started. And by the time the book came out, it was three.
The timing was perfect in hindsight, because you're right. He was squaring off head-to-head with Donald Fair in his third labor stoppage, which pretty much, I mean, you cannot ignore that his legacy will involve some sort of conversation about work stoppages, but yet he had to win these wars for his owners.
Yeah, you know, listen, I don't think Bettman has never lost sight of who he works for. He doesn't work for the fans. He doesn't work for the game. It's not, you know, there's none of that mumbo-jumbo that was associated with the baseball commissioner or the idea that it was an independent position. His employers are the 30 owners of the NHL teams. And, you know, ultimately, you know, it's good for the business to have a healthy game, and it's good for the business to have 30 competitive teams. But in the end of the day, it's about making money for the owners.
Exactly what state was the league in before he arrived? How Mickey Mouse mom-and-pop shop was the NHL?
Well, you know, I, at the tail end of John Ziegler's reign as president, he wasn't commissioner, because that was the title that Bettman was the first to get. The NHL was a $400 million a year business. You know, to put that in perspective for your listeners, this year they came awfully close to $3.7 billion. Next year, I think everybody believes that they're going to $4 billion. So it's an incredible growth in the state of the game. I mean, when Bettman took over, it was a 26-team league. You had unhealthy franchises. You had a number of them that were on the cusp of moving. You know, we saw Quebec City and Winnipeg leave early in his tenure. I mean, you know, there was a lot of, the game was in flux, and certainly when you look at it, you can't dismiss those three labor stoppages and the effect that they had on the fans, but the business is a lot healthier than it was when he took over.
How healthy is it with this 50-50 revenue split down from 57% prior to the work stoppage?
Well, I think it's very healthy for the owners, and I think, you know, I think fans look at it and still see the size of the contracts and think that it's not so bad for most of the players either. You know, I don't think that precludes at some point further down the line the owners getting even greedier and saying that they need it to be, you know, 55-45 or something. But for the moment, you know, we've got some peace, at least for the next nine seasons.
One of the things that you sort of, you continue to be reminded of in this book is that Gary Bettman does not back down, and Gary Bettman has a memory like an elephant, does he not?
He does. He can hold a grudge with the best of them. And, you know, and he's, yeah, and he's that kind of, in a way, the classic little man with a big chip on his shoulder. I mean, he came from a relatively humble background, a broken family, raised by his mother out on Long Island, Queens, and then Long Island. And, you know, he's always been striving and trying to prove himself. And, you know, and to this day, I think that remains a huge part of his personality.
And it seems like those who work around him absolutely hold his work ethic and his ability to prepare for a battle in immensely high regard.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I mean, I wouldn't want to work for Gary Bettman, and I imagine you wouldn't either. I mean, he is a 24/7 sort of guy. It's not uncommon. He sleeps 4 hours a night. It's not uncommon to get emails from him, you know, in the wee hours of the morning, and often they're about very small details. You know, his mastery of files that he's involved with, especially anything to do with sort of contractual or business arrangements. His background as a lawyer, I mean, he's very smart. You know, he's very well prepared, and he's tenacious to the extreme.
I wonder what you know. We're all curious about how this started with hockey. He was clearly an NBA guy. He's got a legal background, but I liked you shed some light on that. He was kind of a hockey fan when he was going to college. He was always fond of the sport, if not competing in the sport.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when he was at university, his Ivy League school. I mean, hockey was a big part of where he went, and you know, he says he has season tickets to watch it. That he even tried to play once or twice. You know, again, I'm not, you know, and then he did tell me that he remembers taking the bus and going down or the subway and going down and watching Rangers games and sitting up in the cheap seats as a kid by himself and doing his homework. So I think in the end, you know, that notion that he had no connection with the game is a bit oversold. You know, is he does he live and breathe it the way that the Canadians do? No, that's not the truth either.
How is he perceived in this country, and where do maybe the perception, is it farthest off base from who he actually is?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, in certain segments of this country, he could be ranked among history's greatest monsters. I think that's probably a little off base, if not a lot off base. I mean, it's a funny job, right? I mean, the commissioner of the NHL, in many ways, he's more powerful than a lot of provincial premiers in Canada. He's better recognized than a lot of federal politicians, and he's got more, you know, arguably more impact on people's day-to-day lives than a lot of those folks. So he's, you know, I think people have tended to look at him as an all-purpose villain and somebody who embodies the things that they don't like about hockey. But I think, you know, a fairer analysis, and that's, you know, part of what the book was about, is that it's certainly, he has done some positive things for the game, and certainly when it comes to Canada and the Canadian franchises, you know, as people, certainly people at West would remember, I mean, he's done a lot to make sure in those dark days in the 90s when the currency was plunging and a lot of Canadian teams were in trouble, he did a lot to make sure that more of them didn't move.
And you mentioned the market he might be most popular in is one that's seen the most turmoil in the last decade, half decade. He's revered in Phoenix.
Yeah, I think you know that too will pass as time goes on and people get to concentrate more on hockey. But yeah, I think the fans, the core of fans there, and you know, to be truthful, it's not a huge core, but there are fans there. They certainly appreciate the efforts that he's gone to, the lengths to which he's gone to make sure that hockey remains in Phoenix.
What were your communications like with Bettman through the process? And I'm sure at some point you probably want to mention to the guy you're writing a biography about that you're going to do so. What was his reaction to that you would be the first guy to write a book on him?
Well, you know, I mean, I went and knocked on the front door. I didn't start the book until I'd actually contacted him. And, you know, I had discussions through, you know, various intermediaries at the NHL and sort of said, listen, that I want to do this. I'm not coming in with a preconceived notion. I'm not hockey's not what I write about on a regular basis. I write about politics. I write about, you know, amateur sports and other things for McLean's. But, you know, I didn't have a history with him, though I'd spoken to him a couple times. And, you know, I said, listen, I just want to tell the full story and talk to a lot of people and look at both sides of the ledger. And, you know, I got a positive response in that. And he, you know, the thing about Gary was he didn't stand in my way. And he's really capable of doing that for people that he's got a problem with. But, you know, he was really good. He made sure I knew that when I would call somebody for this book, the first thing that would happen is that they would pick up the phone or dash off an email to Bettman and say, hey, this guy wants to talk. Can I talk to him? And, you know, and I found that nobody was told no. Everybody was said, sure, you know, give him some cooperation. And in the end, I think it really helped me out.
Were you surprised that he was that open to you writing a book however you wanted to? Because he does, if you called him a control freak, people wouldn't say you're over, you know, that's overstating things. He does like to control every single detail, and this is a biography about him himself.
Yeah, you know, he's very capable of arguing his own case. I mean, that's the thing about him. And in fact, I think it's one of his greatest faults is that anybody who's ever really dealt with him, and certainly I've experienced this as well. I mean, I always say it's good Gary, bad Gary, right? He can be extremely charming. He can be very solicitous, and certainly a lot of the people that work for him will tell you, of real humanity on his part, of a caring person who's big on fans and things like that. But at the same time, if you deal with him in a professional capacity, certainly it's a he's the kind of guy who takes umbrage at the questions that he's asked. He likes to pick apart what he feels are suppositions that you're making. It's very, very lawyerly, and I think it does him a real disservice, particularly when he's on television. It's one of those reasons that, you know, I think people watch him on TV and they come away with an impression that this guy is not the guy that they like.
He does almost come across as that used car salesman guy where you want to talk about one thing and he slides the conversation elsewhere, and he's got these prepackaged answers. He looks a little slippery. He never really did get along with Ron McLean's line of questioning very well.
No, you know, and that's a particular pathology between the two of them. I think, you know, Bettman has always felt like that there's a certain lack of respect for him and for the league. And, you know, while I think he's been willing to tolerate that to a certain extent south of the border, where they know where they are in the pecking order, here in Canada, I think he feels that a little more acutely. And certainly, you know, he certainly had great difficulty with those McLean interviews. He hasn't talked to him, I think, since 2010, and I don't imagine he ever will again. And, you know, it really was about a sense that they were somehow disrespectful, that putting your broadcast, your sports partner on the hot seat and needling them year after year was something that, you know, wouldn't happen to, what Fox wouldn't do to the commissioner of baseball or another network wouldn't do to the commissioner of the NFL.
It's a fair point. So it's funny, we talked about Phoenix. The fans absolutely adore him there because he's kept the team there. And if you were a previous owner of the Coyotes, like Jerry Moyes, who made all his money in trucking and then probably lost it all trying to own the Coyotes, or if you're someone that works at City Hall in Glendale, or if you're someone from the that pays taxes in that area, I mean, he can be pretty ruthless as well. It wasn't all everything rosy, especially in that market. He would be seen as a villain by many there, too.
Oh, absolutely. Listen, I mean, that Glendale deal, let's not beat around the bush. That's about the worst deal ever for the taxpayers of Glendale. And it's astounding, you know, that they were ever hoodwinked into signing it and to continuing to throw good money or after bad, you know, for those 2 years or almost three before they found somebody to come in and buy that franchise. I mean, the taxpayers of Glendale were paying $25 million a year to subsidize that team. I mean, it's ridiculous. And they're wedded to that, and they don't want to lose the team. And, you know, Bettman had taken advantage of that. He drove a hard bargain.
We are chatting with Jonathan Gatehouse, the author of The Instigator, How Gary Bettman Remade the League and Changed the Game Forever. If there's one thing I wished about this book, I wish you wrote it a year later so we could hear about this Rogers purchase of the entire rights of NHL packages, including the rights to play highlights on other channels. How all-encompassing and one-of-a-kind is a deal like this?
It really is. I don't think there's any sort of model. It's a groundbreaking thing. I mean, it's something that certainly other leagues are going to be looking at, and it flew against what the conventional wisdom was, right? The idea was that you do what the NFL has done and try to get as many broadcasters as possible involved, all competing against each other for a slice of the pie. I think, you know, most people in Canada, myself included, believe that what we were going to end up with Rogers ended up taking it. They were going to get, you know, a game of the week, like on Sunday night or something. But it's breathtaking, the scale of this deal, and it's breathtaking the amount of money. $5.2 billion for 12 years is major league money coming out of the Canadian market.
It's huge dough. Is there any way that you could see this not working for Rogers? And I know this is the company that owns me, and I have no idea how this works. This is way north of my pay grade. But is it possible they paid too much for rights? We've seen some NFL deals where broadcasters will say, we can at least for the promotional value break even and come out ahead because they'll hang around for our other shows. Is it in that territory, or is this the safest thing in the world, betting on Canadians watching hockey?
Well, I mean, listen, they own the claims as well, so let's both hope that it works out. But I don't know. You know, it's one of those things. CBC would always say that they broke even, more or less, on money in, money out in terms of advertising for Hockey Night in Canada. But we've seen what's happened with CBC losing that revenue, right? I mean, they've had to make incredible cuts to their news services and to their staffing levels. So really, there was more of an impact than just dollar in, dollar out. Rogers is different. You know, there's a subscription-based service with the Sportsnet channels. It's content for that. It's content for a lot of other platforms in the Rogers, not just radio, but, I mean, you know, mobile phones and iPads, and, you know, and even, you know, there's going to be content in the magazine, certainly in Sportsnet magazine and in McLean's too. So the cost is spread across a lot of different outlets. It's a bet. It's an audacious bet that, you know, but if the price of sports keeps going up the way it has 12 years from now, I'm not so sure that it won't look like a good bet.
It's unbelievable. Every time we see these TV deals, they're landmarks, they're record-breaking, and then the next time the deals come up, they are astronomically greater in value. I can't imagine what the next NFL contracts are going to look like, because the last ones were eye-popping.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, this is just it. I mean, you would think at a certain point the expansion has got to slow or has got to end or the bubble burst, but right now it's incredibly valuable to both networks and to advertisers, because sports is the only thing pretty much that you can guarantee that people are going to sit down and watch live. They're not going to PVR it. They're not going to fast forward through your commercials. They're not going to, you know, tune in at some later point. And, you know, as I say, now I think what the NHL really liked about this deal was the fact that, one, that it was, you know, everything was in one place, that all the games are going to be available, you know, kind of across the country. And then, two, that, you know, that it really was pushing the envelope in terms of technology, and that's where I think the NHL has always seen the growth. That this is mobile platforms and getting people to watch non-traditional ways.
When it all was said and done, how long did it take from spinning the idea, or at least pitching the idea, to Bettman and the league itself, to the finished copy being available on bookshelves? How long was that process for you?
Oh God, it felt like forever. I think I researched the book for about, I don't know, 10 months. And then I sat down and I took 4 months off of work, and I wrote almost all of it in the 4 months, and then wrote another chapter afterwards. And then last summer I went back and added an update about the lockout and the fallout of the lockout for the paperback edition. So, you know, it's a long process.
And did you ever get feedback from Bettman? I'm sure he read this thing as soon or even before it was available, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I sat down with Gary last summer in Boston, just before the or during the Stanley Cup Finals there, and so I got some feedback from him. I mean, you know, it wasn't as bad as I'd been led to believe. I'd been softened up and told that I was going to get the most detailed and persnickety book report of all time. In the end, you know, he made a few points. The one that really stuck with me was that I had said that, you know, he's always pretended that he doesn't mind when people boo him. And he took issue with that, because I said that in the book that that actually I felt like he really did mind and that you could see it. And he took issue and brought that up and said, you know, you say this, but that's not true. And, you know, it proves to me that you don't get me. And I thought, well, geez, if there's anything that proves that you did get someone, that you've nailed it more than them saying, you know, taking umbrage at that is, I didn't know what it was. So.
I don't have thin skin. Look at me objecting to the book you wrote about me. I don't have thin skin.
I really upset that you said I had a thin skin. Exactly. So.
Yeah, so I think you made your point there. You probably win that battle. Jonathan, an absolute pleasure reading this book. Nice catching up with you. I would recommend all our listeners that can read, which is most of them, to read the book, The Instigator, How Gary Bettman Remade the League and Changed the Game Forever. Congratulations on a great piece of work, and thoroughly enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks very much, Ryan. It was a pleasure.
All right, that is Jonathan Gatehouse, senior writer for McLean's Magazine. As he mentioned, he took 4 months off work after a year of research and wrote the first ever biography on Gary Bettman. I love that last point where Bettman's like, you don't get me. I don't. It doesn't bother me when I'm booed. I don't have thin skin. Well, Gary, you're just whining about how you've been perceived by someone else. That's the definition of being thin-skinned. So he's an interesting dude. The more you read this book, in terms of, like, the deeper you get into it, the more you realize how absolutely determined, hardworking, well-prepared, and vigilant this guy is. He had that staff at the NHL offices more than a year before that last work stoppage, completely in war mode, ready to go, fully prepared, contingencies totally set up. And at the end of the day, while Donald Fair will get a lot of credit for how he did with the players, Gary got the 50-50 split. He brought revenues from 57 down to 50-50. And are there a few problem franchises? Absolutely. Are there some franchises making immensely huge amounts of money? North of $200 million in revenue speculated in Toronto now. Their valuation by Forbes over $1 billion. Yeah, there's some serious success stories. There's not a lot of owners losing money on the NHL, no matter what they tell you, because they probably run the building anyway and all the other streams of revenue that don't get put into HRR, hockey-related revenue. So a good conversation there with Jonathan Gatehouse. And again, the book is called The Instigator. You give that name and a Gary Bettman biography to your favorite bookstore, you'll find it no problem at all. We have a special guest coming up in 8 minutes. 7 minutes. We're getting there. I don't know what to say. I can't wait. It is a secret guest. I'm not allowed to say who it is. And yet, in 5 minutes, prepare your doors to be blown off. Josh, do you have any, what's your feeling on this thing? How's it going to go?
It's going to go really well.
Yeah.
Knowing who the guest is, he'll carry us through the segment.
So now again, you're giving out clues. This is a he. It's not a she.
Oh, like you were Mr. Innocent on that earlier today.
What are you talking about? Is that he or she?
Oh, he. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe it's a she.
Well, there you are. See? I played both sides. So we will find out exactly who our special guest is. It's relating a major, major announcement today for Sportsnet and a sporting body of sorts. We'll come back, tease that a little harder, and get set for our next guest. Reminder, tonight we do carry the Blue Jays and the Astros at 6 o'clock. Jays have won 5 in a row. They are 2.5 back of the lead of the AL East. They hold the second wild card. They got a bit of a cushion now on Seattle and New York. I believe 2.5 games north of those two clubs. If the playoffs were to begin today, they would have a one-game showdown in LA against the Angels, which a little bit scary, but hey, they're a playoff team. They're 3 games up, not 2.5, over New York and Seattle. So you have to like where they are versus where they've been. They went 2-8 into the All-Star break. Since then, they are 10-3, and I believe they've won 4 consecutive series, which is awfully impressive. They've got 4 in Houston, starting tonight with Drew Hutchison. He's coming off a very strong performance in the Bronx. He snapped that 17-game losing streak against the Pinstripes in their park. And Houston, young, couple good players, Jose Altuve, an all-star, and leads the majors in hits. And, of course, your thoughts are always welcome at 960-960. We will get to that and then come back with our special guest regarding a landmark announcement today in the world of sports. It is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Proud to be Calgary's only 24/7 all-sports radio. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Little Chromeo, your artist of the day. And if you have children or you're over 30, you might not know who this is. Pretty cool. It's the most peaceful Israeli-Palestinian combination in the world. Two dudes from Montreal, pretty funky. This is called So Gangsta. We'll let this buzz for a while. Text line at 960-960 as we are waiting our special guest, who will be calling in any moment. Secret guest. You guys don't have to be so dramatic for little old us, signed Boomer's Cavs. No, Boomer's Cavs is not the special guest. Good story on Gary Bettman and the book, the biography. Wondering if they have a pitcher biography book for Rhett Warner. Yeah, you wouldn't want too many words. Pitcher book biography? Has there been one of those before?
That would probably be the first.
It'd be perfect, though. You have pictures of nachos. Like, Rhett likes nachos.
Just in one sentence.
You have like a picture of the boards, just a couple feet inside the blue line. Be like, off the glass and out. You're like different chapters. Buffalo, Rhett. And you have like a foot of snow and an abandoned warehouse. Anyway, it is time. It is 7:30. A huge announcement. Let's get right to it. Oh, yes, this is fantastic. Huge news today, and we are absolutely thrilled to welcome to the program Brett the Hitman Hart. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
How do you like the tunes coming in?
Oh, the tunes are good.
That's fantastic. How was your day? This is big news today. Sportsnet and the WWE teaming up.
It's huge. It's bigger than people. I don't think anyone even realizes how big it is. I mean, this is the biggest thing in wrestling that I can think of, maybe since WrestleMania itself.
So what are the implications of this as Sportsnet and WWE get together and are announcing a new channel and, I suppose, an unprecedented broadcast agreement?
Oh, it's a 10-year deal between WWE and Rogers. You know, there's the WWE Network is going to be available as a subscription channel, previewing August 12th. And it's so amazing. You know, when you look at the network, you'll be able to watch all the pay-per-view events, the original shows, the series, live in-ring action, the reality shows, video on demand, the library. You know, it's just going to be, you know, for me, you know, I can just go back and watch so many of my matches through my career that a lot of times, you know, you never see them back. You know, you wrestle and you're on the road, you don't see your pay-per-views back. And for me, it's a dream come true. I can actually, in just a few days, I'll be able to check out any match I want from any time period, any pay-per-view, any WrestleMania, going back to, you know, the very first ones, you know, when Andre the Giant was around and being the last one in the Battle Royal with him. I would love to watch that whole match back with all the football players. I mean, I can just sit there and go on and on about the matches that I'm going to watch back. But I know that there's fans that, I hear a lot of fans talk about they like the wrestling from the 90s. You know, well, now they can watch the wrestling from the 90s, any pay-per-view. They can go back and watch any of the WrestleManias that I had or the SummerSlams. I mean, it's just, to me, it's a great day. It's a celebration.
That's pretty cool. And you know what? How much have things changed? It was not that long ago that a lot of the events weren't televised, that you wouldn't see things live, that the pay-per-views were your chance to see the big guys all in the ring. Now you've got the women's side of the sport is absolutely blown up. You've got reality television. These guys are doing music videos. I mean, how much have you seen this the WWE grow from its infancy and even when you started versus now?
Oh, it's just changed so much, you know. I know so many people today that love all the different aspects of the wrestling. I know a lot of people that are big fans of the Divas show, for example, which you can be able to watch on demand. You know, like there's so many little things that the WWE is doing now that every fan that watches can check out all the programming. You know, it's so much there. It's a treasure chest for any wrestling fan to watch and go back and relive, you know, the experiences of yesterday. I mean, I can think of, for me personally, I mean, first chance I get, I'm going to watch my brother Owen when I lost the title to Bob Backlund in 1994. I think it was my brother Owen that made my mom throw the towel in the match. I don't know if you remember all that a long time ago, but it was such an intricate match. I mean, it was so many things involved in pulling that match off and making it as good as it was. And I'm going to look forward to watching it. The first thing I watch. And then I'll just start from there. I'm planning on watching a lot of my brother Owen stuff, a lot of his stuff near the end, you know, the last few years that he wrestled. It would be a lot of fun to relive all that. You know, there were so many great memories, and there's so many wrestlers that I can think of that I'd love to watch back their pay-per-views. I remember Kurt Angle wrestling Brock Lesnar a long time ago, one of the WrestleManias. I always saw it live on television here in my house, but I would love to watch it back. And now with this network, you just sit and flip through one match after another and go, okay, I want to check out this one, and I want to check out that one. It's just, it's for anyone that's a wrestling fan, and every wrestler that has a passion, let's say I did. I mean, there's a little bit of wrestling fan in all of us. And this is going to serve that need. It's just great. It's going to be every wrestling fan's dream.
It is a 10-year agreement between Rogers and the WWE. Of course, the same current program on Sportsnet 360 will continue. Also, the WWE Network, a premium channel, will be brought via Rogers until 2020. 24. We are chatting with Brett the Hitman Hart, the world's most famous Canadian at one point, here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Brett, one of the cool things about this network as well is you can kind of watch them old WCW stuff and other wrestling companies that the WWE has acquired the rights to over the years. That's something that's got to be pretty cool. A guy like you who spent some time in that company as well.
Well, you know, I know for every fan here in Calgary, they're probably wondering if they could go back and check out the old Stampede Wrestling, and I'm pretty sure that's on the network also, and what a treasure chest that would be to dig through and look at some of the old Ed Whalen stuff, and, you know, John Foley, and, you know, Bad News Brown, and all those kind of guys from back a long time ago, including my dad. You know, I miss those moments in the ring with John Foley and Ed Whalen. I would love to watch any of that stuff. And if it's not on the network, it'll be on the network soon, I'm sure of that.
I guess, Brett, for you, your career spanning when you came into late in the 80s and through the 90s, you were, you know, the top guy in the company for so long. I guess when you look at it now, what do you see in the WWE product today? What do you like about it? What are some of the things that maybe you would like to see change from it now, because it was so popular at one point? It's maybe tailed off a little bit. Something like this can help kind of spring it back to the level where you want it to be. But if to you, what do you like, or what are some of the things you'd like to change about it?
Well, I don't think a lot of the wrestlers today get enough credit. You know, I think, I think the wrestlers today are as good as they've ever been. You know, they've really raised the bar. You know, there's so many wrestlers that have created new moves and spectacular sort of death-defying kind of moves. And you know, that's what I like about the wrestling today, is that there's still a lot of young wrestlers that are innovating and creating new things that nobody's seen before, nobody's done before. It'll be a long time before anybody can, you know, copy or emulate guys like Rey Mysterio. You know, Daniel Bryan, I know he's out with a neck injury right now, but he's a phenomenal wrestler. He's got all the real great qualities of being a great wrestler. He's... like I say, he's an innovator. He comes up with a lot of fresh, new stuff that, you know, a lot of people watch wrestling and go, I've seen all this stuff before. But, you know, if you start watching some of these wrestlers, the new guys that are coming up today, they're not the same old thing over and over. There's a lot of real, fresh, new, creative stuff that's coming out of wrestling today that I've never seen before.
Brett, one of the things I've been really, really pleased to see from the WWE over the past few years is getting a hold of, I think, what was a major concern in the mid-90s, as it was in other sports, with drug testing and having a support system in place for the athletes. Back in the days, you know, we heard about the rigorous travel, and there was guys that got in some very bad habits. How happy are you that there's a support system in place for guys, and there's now a place to go to help if you need it?
Yeah, they've been right on top of that for a long time, WWE. You know, there were a lot of wrestlers ended up with drug problems over the years, but you know, the wrestlers that I see today are, it's a whole different crop of wrestlers. They're not the big, huge, sort of giant wrestlers that we had years ago. They're a little more normal sized, and they're a lot of the bulky kind of huge wrestlers that we had back in the 80s. They don't really they can't really keep up with these young guys today. I don't think there's not that many. A lot of the wrestlers today are super fit, and they take everything really serious. When I go to the WWE shows, I'm always floored by how committed everyone is. They really strive to deliver the great match, or the best matches they can as possible. And I see some great wrestlers. Cesaro is another guy that I see today that he's a phenomenal wrestler, one-of-a-kind wrestler. There's so many interesting characters from, you know, Batista's back. You got Brock Lesnar. You got SummerSlam coming up. There's a lot of great things coming for wrestling fans. And the network is the cherry on the cake. I mean, you can watch all the SummerSlams back from the beginning if you want to. There's so many things that you can do. You just open up a can of worms and just check out every match you ever wanted to see. And that's past, present, and future.
Brett, I wonder
it's
for
a
you.
Good day.
Yeah, Brett, I wonder for you, what is your favorite moment in your career? I mean, there's so many moments and great matches that you were involved in. Your first title in 92, you win in Saskatoon over Ric Flair, or your Iron Man match at WrestleMania 12 with Shawn Michaels, the 60-minute match there. That was, some people still today say, is the greatest WrestleMania match ever. Or maybe your return and you wrestled Vince McMahon at WrestleMania 26. Is there one really match that sticks out for you that's your all-time favorite, or maybe some of the battles you had against Owen?
Well, I think the ones that stand out the most are the Iron Man match I had with Shawn Michaels is still holds the, still stands up to the test of time. I think it's still the match to top. I think I haven't seen two wrestlers outperform Shawn or I in that match yet that I can believe in my heart. I think it was still the hardest effort by two wrestlers in the ring. Stone Cold match from WrestleMania 13, for anyone that's sort of a novice fan or hasn't watched or doesn't know the match, I know it's Steve Austin's favorite match. I know it's for sure one of my favorite matches. it's such a brilliant, hard-fought battle, the one I have with Steve Austin at WrestleMania 13, that any casual fan or somebody that hasn't seen that in a long time would probably just love to watch it from beginning to end. You know, I think it explains itself, just the match itself, how good we both were. And I think Steve Austin was at a turning point in his career at that time. And I know I was getting ready to embark on a different road, from being the sort of the wrestling hero to being the American bashing Canadian.
Yeah.
But it was a fun time. It was a really fun time. That would be something I'd love to watch back. You know, the thing about the network that's really good is the obscure stuff, the things that you forget about, some of the Survivor Series matchups. And, I remember wrestling my brother Owen in the cage at SummerSlam in Chicago would be another fun match to watch back. I had the match I had with the British Bulldog in Wembley Stadium would be another one I'd love to watch back. And like I said, there's a lot of obscure ones. Like I would love to watch, it'd be one of the first in my sort of list of matches that I'm going to watch when I get a chance, as soon as this network comes on. I'm going to watch the SummerSlam match where I won the title from Undertaker.
Yeah.
97. It was just as far as timing and execution and stuff, it was like spot on, like really a perfect match.
And you talk about SummerSlam, obviously a big event that's once again coming up here, and just kind of a two-part question. Obviously, you mentioned The Undertaker there, Brock Lesnar back in, with John Cena, fight John Cena for the title at this year's event. First of all, maybe your thoughts on SummerSlam, and second, I always wanted to get your thoughts maybe on The Undertaker's WrestleMania streak coming to an end this year. Were you shocked and surprised that something like that happened?
Yeah, I think it caught me off guard, just like it did everyone else. I think Undertaker, for so many years, and took so many years to build that 21-0, and finally to have Brock Lesnar be the guy that broke the streak was quite a surprise. I still don't know how Undertaker's doing. I know he's had a lot of problems after that match, physical problems, and as far as I know, nobody's heard a peep from him since. Nobody really knows the status of whether he's finished career-wise or whether he's going to make another attempt to come back. But, either way, I would love to watch Undertaker from before or watch him now. I think the SummerSlam this year is going to be really good. I think John Cena is one of those wrestlers today that doesn't get enough credit for being the superstar that he is. He's one of the hardest working wrestlers I've ever seen. And he's definitely the star of the show and the star of the company.
From an amateur wrestler at Ernest Manning High School here in Calgary to one of the iconic sportsmen in the world, I wonder at what point in your career maybe you acknowledged how huge the brand of what the WWF was at that time. I mean, I can't imagine showing up to countries you've probably never heard of or only seen on a map before and being greeted by thousands. What was the peak of that, or maybe a moment where you just said, I never, ever imagined this could happen?
Well, I had so many of those kind of memories. Going to India and going to Africa and the Philippines and even in faraway countries in like in Europe and the Eastern Bloc and things like that. I mean, I've been so fortunate over my lifetime to have been to so many places and to have been recognized and you know, claimed a hero by kids and stuff like that. It was such a big honor to be held in that kind of to be in that kind of lofty position. And you know, I tried my best to be a good champion, but I know right from the very start I was always Bret the Hitman Hart from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And you know, I have a lot of people say that put Calgary on the map, and I don't know about that, but I know that that it helped people figure out where Calgary was just by trying to represent the country or the city well.
Farther to that, Brett, being from Calgary, and you talked about you kind of helped put Calgary on the map. I mean, I can imagine being a Calgarian, so much pride in the city. You're still involved and live in the city, involved with the Calgary Hitmen, the junior hockey team, so much history there. Is that got to be, to me, I mean, that would be one of the most proudest things of your career is how much what you meant to this city here in Calgary and to Canada as a country.
Well, I think my dad left a pretty big pair of shoes to fill, and I've done the best I can to... you know, to walk in his shoes and carry his memory forward. And, you know, I've had some great fans and, you know, there's a lot of things that made wrestling great up here in Calgary. It was, you know, I had a lot of brothers involved. I had Ed Whalen was, maybe the greatest wrestling announcer of all time. My dad had a good show with a lot of, stars that eventually made it to WWE anyway, but he was the kind of the launching pad for wrestlers in the 70s and the 80s, and you know, nothing but good memories from the old Stampede days and what it, where wrestling's gone since then with the WWE. I mean, my career, I've had a lot of, you know, rocky road with WWE, you know, but the truth is that you know, I'm grateful for everything they did do for me, and they gave me a great opportunity, and I have when I look back over my storied career, I have nothing but great memories. There's a few bad memories at the end, but on the overall, you know, I'm just really glad that that they gave me the chances that they did for my career.
You mentioned The Undertaker and just not understanding or knowing exactly where he's at health-wise. I mean, how that is such a common story amongst wrestlers. The toll on the body is unimaginable, and I just wonder what day-to-day life is like for Bret Hart now and how you're feeling and what you do day-to-day.
Well, you know, I'm actually doing pretty good. I've had both my knees replaced over the last couple of years, and it's been a bit of a struggle just sort of getting through all that. I had one knee got done, and then the other one, and one took a lot longer than the other. But you know, a lot of I'm paying a price for all those body slams and you know all those falls that I took throughout my career. And you pay a price for that physically, I think. Years later, that you don't realize it all adds up. But I'm on the most, for the most part, I mean, I'm pretty good. I'm kind of moving a little slower than I used to, but I'm feeling pretty good. I have I've had a really good summer. It's great being here in Calgary. This is like the nicest place in the world to live during June, July. I don't think there's anywhere on the planet that's nicer than Calgary. And I'm proud to be from Calgary, and I'm proud to live here. I've always lived here, and I'm always going to live here. You know, I do my best to wave the Calgary flag as best I can.
Well, you did a fantastic job of it, and as great as an ambassador as you've been for the WWE, you're even a better one as a Calgarian, and I can't thank you enough for taking some time to chat with us today, and keep up just being a fantastic Calgarian. Love seeing you around town. I don't think there's anyone the city's more proud of than you, Brett, so thanks for your time this morning.
All right, thank you.
All right, that is Bret the Hitman Hart as Rogers and the WWE announcing today a 10-year agreement. Starting August 12th, that's a couple weeks away, there'll be a preview of the WWE Network, including live WWE pay-per-view events, groundbreaking original series, live in-ring action, reality shows. Video on demand library will also be available on a subscription basis on Rogers Channel 512. Pretty cool. All the regular programming you've already got on 360 continues. And Rogers will distribute the WWE Network. Exciting news. Brett was talking about it. You can go back and watch any matches you want from the archives at any time. This is pretty cool.
That's the big seller. I mean, I know there's a lot of people, the way the WWE has kind of changed now to a PG kind of network, geared mostly towards kids and children at this kind of this time. A lot of people really were big fans of it in the late 90s and what they called the Attitude Era, with guys like The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin and a little more edgy stuff. And now you have the ability to go back and watch those. So this is something that, even if you're not a fan of the WWE right now, or you just kind of lost a little bit of interest, you're still a fan, but you can go back now and watch all these things from the late 90s, the early 90s, when you were a kid growing up watching this, even into the 80s, you know, when you were a young kid watching this, and coming all the way up through there. So it's a really cool thing that kind of gears towards everybody, whether you're a fan now or before.
All right. For more information, I imagine, head to our website, sportsnet.ca. There'll be some stuff there, and that's pretty cool. Any match ever, on demand, from your phone, from your computer,
iPads,
TV,
anything.
All that good stuff. We'll break. We'll come back. We have got to get all squared up away and ready for 8 o'clock. Our next guest is Elliot Friedman. We're going to talk Montreal, PK Subban. What are they doing? We're like 24 hours away from arbitration. They cannot get into the boardroom. Can they? Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Talking sports in the morning. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
It is 7:55 on your Thursday morning. Pinder and Humphreys, and yeah, big news there. The WWE Network will be available for you. Free subscription, free preview, excuse me, on August 12th. Doesn't matter whether you're cable, satellite, IPTV, you're going to have it. WWE Network. I can't tell you what channel
all
it's on
because
it doesn't exist yet. I know we had a lot of people texting, what about if I'm on this or that? Or Yeah, you'll get it. And good to hear from the legend. He was the most recognized Canadian on planet Earth for a while. Like, unbelievably. He says China, Africa, that, India.
As far
a guy
as
from Calgary.
Yeah, that's what I always thought. You know, as an international celebrity, has anyone ever been bigger than Bret Hart? I mean, you have Wayne Gretzky, but yeah, sure, that was North America. But international,
yeah.
All over the entire world, there can't be anybody that's been recognized as much as Bret Hart was and has been in his career.
Who the heck in the Southern Hemisphere knows who Wayne Gretzky is? Like, just talking globally. Not many at all. No one in Africa. No one
in
India.
And they'll remember Bret Hart because they did so many shows there. And you go look at the videos. He was so popular in places like Johannesburg and all over the world. It's incredible.
Okay, you dropping. You know what country Johannesburg's in?
South Africa.
Oh, this guy's unbelievable.
I told
you. Josh Humphries, ladies and gentlemen.
When it comes to the 2004 Flames and old school wrestling trivia, there's no one that can beat me.
All right. Speaking of which, we'll play Stump the Hump in about an hour as we do more trivia with Humphreys. He got a little tied up on Andrew Ference.
But I still got it.
Yesterday. We had to give him a clue.
There's no time limit.
We went to video review and the call in the field stands. He's perfect on trivia. 2 for 2 thus far. But it's day 3.
It's getting harder.
We're going to ramp it up because, of course, we took the day off when we were up at Stewart Creek. No trivia. We had loads of NHL interviews live from the Alberta Hockey Foundation Golf Classic, which was a blast, and also criteria from Bret Hart there. I don't know how much time we have here, but we do have some breaking news. So
yeah.
Before we jump out of here, which we've got to about a minute, there is a big deal being reported by Ken Rosenthal, who isn't wrong often when he tweets, and it sounds like the Oakland Athletics are in full buy mode. John Lester, the lefty that was scratched against the Jays yesterday because today is the trade deadline, is going to Oakland, and he's going with Johnny Gomes. Coming back the other way, the Cuban that was signed by the Athletics a couple years ago, Yoenis Cespedes, he of the home run derby fame, back-to-back, he and only Ken Griffey Jr. have gone back-to-back in home run derbies. He did that in Minnesota, about a month ago? Less than a month ago, a couple weeks ago. So Cespedes playing in that cavernous football stadium that Oakland plays in. Can't get a ball out of there. Tons of foul territory. Fences way back. Heavy air by the bay. All of a sudden goes to a tiny ballpark with not a lot of foul ground. Cespedes could absolutely rake in Boston. But for the Athletics, they've now added Sarmadja, Hamels, as well as Lester, on top of a pitching staff that already has Sonny Gray and numerous other very strong pitchers. Before they made the deal with the Cubs, they had the number one rotation for ERA in the AL. Now they've added three very good pitchers, Oakland looks like the team to beat in the AL.
Yeah, it's gonna. Is there anybody in the majors right now that would be a favorite over the Athletics? They got to be the favorite to win the World Series right now, especially after this move. Billy Bean maybe feeling the heat, trying to get something done in Oakland. You've had some success in the regular season, hasn't transpired to the playoffs. Here you go. You've got a rotation that in a 7-game series is going to be awfully tough to beat.
We'll come back with Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada, and yes, the Rogers Hockey broadcast starting next year. Elliot, we'll ask him a bunch about a new deal in New Jersey for a defenseman that apparently is worth $5 million over a 5-year term, 25 in total. And of course, PK Subban, what the heck is he worth if Andy Green gets 25 over 5 years? Sportsnet 960, The Fan.